You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day guys, welcome to Red Time and Anzac Day edition of the show. I'm your host, Jared Barker. Jake Michaels is with me as usual. Jake, there's hot topic galores today. I feel like we say that every week, but there is a lot to get through today. We survived, of course, the technical difficulties of being on Zoom last week.
It was a horrible experience to go back to that.
It wasn't fun, but we are back in the studios, so looking forward to it. I feel like footy and news doesn't really sleep, so
we do need to crack in.
We'll get started. Harley Reid. Now, that's the talk of the town at the moment. We know he has been in Perth since he really arrived at the footy club. His performance on the weekend has been highlighted, and it deserves to be, but he's not the first player to perform like he is and above the level as expected. That's been in his infancy of the competition. Nick Dacos was quite similar when he came in as well. So it does beg the question, is Harley Reid a better player than Nick Dacos? Or is that just a knee-jerk reaction?
I think that is one of the biggest knee-jerk reactions I think I've ever heard, to be completely honest. And when I saw this question, I thought it was a joke. I didn't think we were actually answering it. I thought it might be a bit more of a throw-ahead or who's going to be. But the question of who is better, they're not in the same stratosphere right now. Harley Reid has played two pretty good games. In fact, I would say he's played one really good game and one good game. And four pretty average games, which is fine because he's only played six games. So
plays in a tough position as well.
He does, but and he plays in a side that has, up until a fortnight ago, had barely won a game. So I'm not knocking him for that. But the question is, we're comparing him to Nick Dacos. Nick Dacos nearly won a Brownlow medal last year in his second season. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the gap between the two. And as I said, it shouldn't be that close. There'd be something, if he came in and he was already at Nick Dacos' level, who might be the best young player we've ever seen, then what sort of future does Harley Reid have?
It's
greatest
funny.
Player of all time trajectory? Easily, you would have said. So, no, they're not on the same level. He will be great, there's no doubt about it, but no, they're not on the same level right now.
If you had to pick one of them and you're playing a grand final this week and you had the choice, I think if your answer isn't Nick Dacos, I agree with you. You either don't watch footy, you hate Collingwood, or you live in Perth, or it's all three of those things. So, look, they've both been... He's going to be a great player. As you said, he took a few weeks to get going, but he has stood out really in the last couple
of
weeks.
But we can't overreact. We just can't overreact.
No,
I agree.
I agree with you.
Because we can. It's just like saying Jake Waterman. Jake Waterman's been a serviceable player. He's had a breakout 2 weeks. I wrote about him. I've given him a lot of credit for what he's been able to do the last fortnight. But it's like saying Jake Waterman is now Charlie Kerner. He's not.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. I agree with you. But in saying that, if hypothetically you did have to have only one of them for the next 15 years, whose career would you rather have?
So that's a far tougher question. And this is the question I thought we were going to answer. And I'm not 100% convinced either way. I think if I had to take one, which seems like is the point of the exercise, it would be Nick Dacos still by a little bit. And that's basically because I'm a big proof of concept guy. I want to be able to see it. Now, we all expect Harley Reid is going to be great. I don't think anyone is looking at him and saying, oh, finding flaws in his game. But I've seen Nick Dacos be great already. There's not a 5-6 year gap between them. That's 2 years. He's 2 years older, Nick. I've seen him be great. I know he can be great. I know he can perform on the biggest stages. I've seen him win an Anzac medal. I've seen him be one of the best players on grand final day. I've seen him do it. Like, I haven't seen
should
that
have
from
a
Harley.
Brownlow medal as well.
He should. Yeah. And I haven't seen it from Harley Reid yet. And it's not to, as I said, it's not to say that he can't do it or won't do it. It's just I haven't seen it yet. So I'm always going to take the known quantity over the unknown, even if the unknown, we kind of do know what it will be. It's very similar to a player that I've always said, a good player that's 22 years old, that we know what they're like, and clubs saying, well, we'll give you a, you know, the 15th selection in the draft. It's like, wouldn't you rather a star player at 22 than an unknown selection, even if they're 3 or 4 years younger?
Yeah.
So take the known quantity, and I know, and for me, that's Nick Daicos and what he can do.
Yeah, different type of players, but maybe it's a better question in 5 years' time.
Mm. Who are you taking?
I'm in the Daicos camp, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. Moving on, which Sydney-based team is the most likely to win the premiership this year?
Yeah, most likely it is essentially who do you believe in more to be able to actually go the distance and win the flag. It's tight. I mean, they're both really good chances, obviously, both pushing for top four this year. And we know what I've said about the Giants as well. I rated them as the number one team in the competition when I...
You were ahead of the curve on that. I've got to give you credit.
I did line up every single list and I ranked them as number one. Man for man, I think their best 22 has more quality in it than any other team in the competition. Mm-hmm. Yet they weren't my premiership tip. And I still feel like I'm going to lean towards Sydney with this, which seems a bit weird. As I said, it's really tight. Both teams are second and third for marks inside 50. They're both in the top five for general inside 50s. Second and third for shots on goal. So they're pretty confident with the way that they move the footy. They can be really effective. Both top five for intercepts as well. So they can win the ball back. That's what makes this so tough because they are quite evenly matched. I think the Swans are a better pressure and tackling team, which has been evidenced by their first six games of the season. So, yeah, I know I ranked the Giants number one, but when you say believe in, look, Callum Mills and Luke Parker have to go back into this Sydney team. The Giants are missing a couple as well, but the Swans have been missing those for the entire season so far. Yeah. They will improve the Swans as well. So,
so you're leaning towards the Swans being more likely to go all the way this year?
I think so. And they've obviously played in the grand final a couple of years ago. I think they've learnt from that experience as well. And I think they can improve maybe a lot more than what the Giants can. Yeah. Even though player for player, I think the Giants do have more quality. Winning a flag takes a lot more mental stability and strength to win it. And I think that's what the Swans have.
Yeah, so I disagree. I think it's the Giants. I think the Giants are the team that is more likely to go and do it. But a big caveat for me with this one is health. And I think we need to look at both teams as if they are fully healthy, because if they're not, then the edge probably does go to Sydney. And we've seen it with important players. You just mentioned a couple of players that haven't played this season as yet, and they've been one of the best sides so far. They haven't skipped a beat. Mm-hmm. Whereas we saw Sam Taylor go out of the side last week, and obviously they played a good team in Carlton, and they lost, and they look like they really missed him. So he won't play again this week. So I think that the reliance on key players, there's probably a little bit more with the Giants. But I do think the potential to go further if they're both healthy is also with the Giants. They're elite across the board. They have very few weaknesses, as you pointed out. They're the number one scoring team, brilliantly coached. I think Adam Kingsley might be the best coach in the sport right now with the way he's not just his game plan, but the way he can make changes within games as well. They've obviously won 16 of the last 20 games going back to last year. So an obvious form side, and not just what they've been able to do this year. I've been impressed with Sydney in a lot of ways, but I guess I'm skeptical about one area, and it's the forward line, particularly the key position players. So they're young, right? Mm. They're young, they're inexperienced, and they haven't proved it in big moments. Logan McDonald, Joel Amati, Hayden McLean, we don't have, and going back to what I said before about the proof of concept stuff with Daicos v. Reed, we don't have that proof of concept that they can deliver consistently against good oppositions. So there's a bit, that's a big concern and worry for me, particularly against a side like the Giants, who score heavily. They're going to have to match them. And I guess the other part of it is that Christian spoke about a couple of weeks ago on the Tuesday episode, was that they don't check any of the champion data premiership standards. And that is, while he didn't say it was concerning, because it's not to say there is only one way to win a flag, it's the way everyone's won a flag. So they would have to do something. The way in which they're playing would have to be a first. No one's ever won a premiership playing the way they currently are.
You could also say that gives them scope for improvement as well if they're not checking off the premiership metrics.
But it's hard to be. You can't just check every. You can't be great at everything. Because if you become great at the premiership metrics, even if you can, you then lose other areas. So I think there's more guarantees with the Giants, I think. And that's why I'm going to take the safer bet I know what I'm getting more week in, week out. And as I said, this is the caveat will be the health. And if they are both healthy, I think it is more likely going to be the Giants going further than Sydney this year.
It's a fair call. That would be a pretty fun grand final, I think, the Giants and the Swans.
Well, they play a lot in finals. I think
they have met a couple of times. Yep. Indeed, they have. And yeah, looking forward to those battles throughout the season for sure. Moving on to the Kangas, can you see this North Melbourne team actually winning a game this season? Will they become the first winless team since Fitzroy in 1964?
I can't believe we're doing this question. I knew this question was coming this year. I didn't know whether it was going to be round 5, round 7, round 12. I knew it was coming at some point this year.
Yep.
Look, if the answer is will they or won't they, and we're only a quarter of the way through the season, of course I'm going to have to go with yes, they will win one. Mathematically, history, everything says that they should win one game. But if you ask me, put a percentage on it that they won't. What chance do you give that? I reckon it's about a 3 or 4% chance that they go through the whole year and don't win a game. Like, I'm going to say that they will, because I think you're crazy to say that a team's going to win.
A team hardly ever goes through a season
or whatever games. But
yeah,
it's not to say that it's 100% guaranteed that they do.
Mm. Clubs will be confident against them, going up against them. There's no match that you can pinpoint right now looking at their fixture. But yep, they win that game.
Yeah, well, they'll never be favourite. They're never going to start a favourite. They'll play West Coast twice. Then they're not going to be favourite in either of those games, I wouldn't imagine. And they're certainly not going to be favourite against anyone else. But that was the same with West Coast last year. They weren't favoured in any game and they won 3.
Mm.
So it's not, you would expect them to win one. And you look at their next run of games, it's not overly difficult. Crows, Saints, Suns, Bombers, Power, Eagles. Like, you don't think they can win one of them? Forget the next 10 that they've got after that. You don't reckon they can win one of those games?
It wouldn't shock me if they do win one of those games. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not putting my life savings on it, but I think
I'd hope you're not.
You'd have to think that they're gonna win one.
Yeah, I mean,
surely
this is it's a grim position for the club to be in. It's sad to see this rebuild after rebuild after rebuild within one big rebuild. You know, these last half decade that the club's been through, they've really suffered from that revolving door of some players leaving and then bringing in rejected players from other clubs, which hasn't helped them. And reports in the last couple of days that Luke Davies-Uniacke might be putting his contract talks on hold. He's a free agent at the end of 2025.
And that would just be heartbreaking.
It'd be
loss,
shocking. And Cam Zerha this year as well. Yeah. I mean, they cannot afford to lose those players.
They can't lose those just key players.
Exactly right. That's hurt them a lot. And Ben McKay last year. I start to feel sorry for guys like Nick Larkin, Harry Sheasel, who put their faith in the club and signed long-term. Now, they're the players that you do want to lock away, but the only thing I'll say, and we spoke about this on Tuesday's podcast, they can look at what Carlton's done. Now, Carlton were quite poor in the middle of last decade with a couple of wooden spoons, but we spoke about that draft in 2015 and bringing
those
players and just letting those players grow together and making sure they don't leave, build a good culture at the club, and now look at them, Carlton are arguably the premiership favourites. It's just Brisbane will like that as well once upon a time. Correct, but it does happen. It does happen. If you do stick together,
it can happen, but
you need a lot to go right.
There aren't many examples of a team in one draft picking up full forward, centre-half forward, and full back for the next 12 years.
The Roos have done it differently with trying to bring in midfielders and trying to grow around the midfield. So Sheasel and Zane Dersma, Colby McKercher and George Wardlaw.
And that's what they have to do. But they have to just get as much talent in there as they can. We spoke about this about West Coast a few weeks ago. These teams need to get as many young, talented kids through the door as they possibly can and then figure it out from there. They're not in a position to be picky about, let's try and get this position or let's try and fill this hole. There's holes everywhere. You need to just get as much in and get a little bit of an excitement in the club.
Yep, get the talent in. Let him grow under Clarko. I mean, he was hardly there last season, we remember. So I think there's still room for improvement here. We just need to be patient, which is hard to say because the fans have needed to be patient for so long. But this new rebuild under Clarko is only just underway. I think.
Can you imagine if they don't win a game under Clarko? How does that affect his legacy? Not to go on another tangent.
It'll only affect his legacy if he leaves without taking them to finals. This is where the patience thing comes in. I think... I think things can turn.
50 plus years to have a season in which you don't win a game when he's viewed as the best coach of the
You're only as good as the players you've got.
Well,
of course you are, but that's what
I've been screaming for years, and no one seems to say that.
So it should. We're going to look back and look at what he's done at Hawthorn and the Kangas, but I don't think it's time to do that yet. Things can turn. Equalisation has a way of rewarding loyalty in this game.
I have a feeling we will be revisiting this question down the line. I'm convinced we will be doing this question again.
I can't wait till we do.
Who looms as the most important player on Anzac Day in the traditional Collingwood-Essendon match?
Yeah, I've gone with Collingwood captain Darcy Moore. We know he's been really underwhelming to start the season, performing below his par of, you know, his All-Australian best that we've seen in the past few seasons. But just with the team news, you know, with Peter Wright coming in, they're going to be quite tall in the forward line, the Bombers. You've got Wright, Harry Jones, and Kyle Langford obviously plays quite tall as a third tall as well. Goldstein, Draper. They're clearly trying to stretch Collingwood's back line, and then Jake Stringer requires a pretty good defender as well. So I think they've got their work cut out. But I just think if Darcy Moore can rediscover his best form, command the skies in that back line, then it would go a long way to Collingwood winning this game. I think he's absolutely crucial to their chances. And Essendon's clearance game and their pressure around stoppages this season has been a real hallmark of what they've been able to do. So if they do get that first supply in the forward line, it only adds to the importance of Darcy Moore. So I'm going with the Collingwood captain.
Yeah, well, I'm also going with the captain at Zach Merritt. So he didn't play last year, you might remember.
Correct.
I reckon that would have stung him as the new captain of the club. He took the responsibility. He's been brilliant since he was given the captaincy at the Bombers. And yeah, I think that would have been hard for him to miss that game. He copped a one-week suspension and wasn't able to play Anzac Day. But if you go back to 2017... Merritt's had 30 plus every Anzac Day. He always plays well on the big occasion. He's been one of the most informed players of the season so far. In fact, I wrote in 6 points this week that I think only two players are having a better season than him so far, yet no one really seems to talk about him or give him the credit he deserves. But not only is he so good, he's just so consistent. There's not much of a gap between his best game and worst game, and I love those kind of players. I don't want the up and down guys. I want just...
You know what you're going to get. Yeah.
Production each and every week. And that's what he does. I think, you know, you're big on the AFL fantasy. I think he's one of three to not dip below 100 this year.
Yeah,
he is. He's ultra consistent. He'll once again feature on Brownlow night. And he's just had a great season so far. Now, can he still have a big game in Essendon lose? Absolutely.
Yeah.
He can still play out of this world, best player on the ground, and they still lose by 4 goals. There's no doubt that can happen. However, I can't see a situation or an avenue to a Essendon win against Collingwood that looks to be back or somewhat back where he doesn't play well. Now, I think that's going to be the key, and that's why I think he's the most important player.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I think that's a good call. Just while we're on Anzac Day, there are two games today, of course. Are you for or against having multiple games played on Anzac Day?
I'm not normally a traditionalist of sorts. Normally I sort of tend to move away from those old traditions, but I quite like one game. I think I prefer one game. I think the build up should be about one game, the excitement, the focus. I like the spotlight being just on the one game, the MCG, the traditional rivals.
Do you think it takes away from...
I think it cheapens it a little bit. When you have multiple games, even if it's just two, I think it cheapens the Anzac game because it becomes two. It's not as unique anymore. Now, some have said that, well, should it always be Essendon Collingwood? Would you be happier if it was just one game, but it was rotating who played? I don't necessarily think that should be the case either. Yeah. I think the history and the rivalry is well established now, and I would happily see it to be an Essendon-Collingwood game on Anzac Day for as long as I'm around.
Yep. I'm not for or against it. I don't know if it takes away from the Essendon-Collingwood game. I don't know if the traditional game takes away from the other game, whether people care about that one as much just because of how big the build-up is. Yeah. But, yeah, maybe it just depends on what the other matchup is.
Going back to something late last year when Damien Hardwick said that 80% of Gold Coast's first premiership team was already on the list when he arrived as new coach. Seeing what we've seen so far in the first quarter of the year, do you believe that statement is accurate or was he totally off the mark?
I mean, he said that in front of his team, right? So he has to give his new side and players confidence that what they're going to be building is actually worth it. So I see why he said it. I think the quote was 80% of our first premiership side is sitting in this room, again, giving them confidence. I mean, the first thing that I do is look at the key position players and see what the crux of the team actually looks like. When he says 80%, I'm not looking at that technically. I'm not going through the list and saying if
but
genuinely...
why not?
I'm just not. I just think it was 80%. As in, look, a lot of our premiership side is in here. That's why I want to.
But then say that. Don't say 80%. Because saying 80% means that it's 80%.
Look,
or more.
He may be right. He may be wrong. But again, I look at just the spine and what he's got when he walks into the club and after the draft as well. So, Charlie Ballard, Sam Collins, Mac Andrew, Jack Lukosius, Jared Witts, Ben King, and now Jed Walter as well, with the midfield group of Miller, Raoul, Anderson, and I think Flanders deserves to be in that group as well. If they can all stay fit and thrive, and you know Dimmer builds it out from there, which is what he wants to do, it's what he needs to do. Well, then I think success can come for this team. I think there's accolades in that group. Technically, he's probably wrong because I don't think technically 80% of the first premiership team is actually on that list, and I'm happy to be proven wrong, but the puzzle just isn't complete. He's got the pieces. He might not have the depth yet, but while I don't think it's happening for him this year, I think it's a work in progress. But I wouldn't put it beyond him because Richmond didn't have the best list in the competition as well. Damien Hardwick just knew how to get the best out of his players, and what's to say he can't do it at the Suns as well?
Look, it's not to say that he can't do that, and it's not to say that the Suns won't eventually be a premiership team under Damien Hardwick, but his statement was nuts. Mm. It's just, it was miles off the mark.
You can see why.
You can be super optimistic about them. Like I was. I was pretty warm on Gold Coast going into this year. I had them potentially finishing eighth. I thought they were going to be a much better side. I really respect and admire Damien Hardwick as a coach. I think he was going to be a difference maker. They've had some good moments this year. They've had some poor moments. They feel a bit Gold Coast-y still, which is a little worrying.
Yep.
But I've looked at their list and just taking the most optimistic view as possible, going through every player. Now, I'm not including the players that they picked up in last year's draft because he said this before then, but I'm just looking at the lists they have and the players they have and how many do we actually think are potentially going to be on that premiership side if they were to win one. And I think it's only Flanders, Fiorini, Ainsworth, Ballard, Miller, Lukosius, Weller, Anderson, Raoul, Humphrey, Collins, Powell, Witts, King, Andrew. That is taking the most optimistic.
I was trying to keep count. Was that 16?
That was 15. Whew. That's 65%, right? And that is the most optimistic view of it. Mac Andrew, are you convinced he will be a premiership player if they went all the way? Lockie Weller, I mean, is he going to play? Is he going to come back from injury and play again? There's a lot of question marks there. So, I think he's miles off. I get that you want to instill confidence, but why not say what you said? Say, you know, a large chunk of it is here, or we're going the saying.
Do what Brendan Bolton did when he went through the Carlton spine and saying, bear with us because this is going to be a spine that we're going to have for the next decade.
Yeah. Maybe the focus should be on the midfield. Maybe the focus should be, you know, Witts, Miller, Raoul, Anderson, Flanders. You know, we have the best core midfield group and young as well. In the competition, focus on things that are true rather than pulling things out of the sky that just aren't. And I think that is that's where he's gone a little wrong, because I still think they have a lot of holes. There's not just a couple of players that are going to come in and take this side to the next level.
Yep.
They're just not. There's still a lot of issues that they have, and they very rarely are able to put a full four-quarter performance together. And that's just not the hallmark of a good side.
Fair enough. Hey, this question is right in your wheelhouse. After six rounds, which player is most likely to win the Brownlow medal?
Well, I think most people will say Isaac Heaney because they assume he's probably polled votes in every game he's played so far. Mm-hmm. And while I agree he would be leading, I don't think he would be the best bet right now to win. He's now the Brownlow favourite. I think the player that is most likely right now to win it, and my preseason pick was Marcus Bontempelli. First time I'd actually picked the Bont to win it. I know a lot of people pick him every year.
He's been stiff a couple of times.
And I thought, you know, this might just be the year he does get home. I'm not changing yet. I'll still stick with Bont. He's not going to be far behind. But Patrick Cripps is the one to keep an eye on. He's obviously won it before. I've got him sitting second at the moment, 10.5 votes behind Heaney on 13. So it's close. It's one best on ground. He's back in front. His numbers across the board are very similar to his 21 Brownlow year. Disposals, contested possessions, tackling, clearance, inside 50s, all that stuff. All the main numbers are very, very similar to when he won it. But there is one big difference to that year. Do you know what Carlton's record was 21? It was 11-11. So 50, a 500, a true 500 season, and he won the Brownlow medal with 29 votes.
Yep.
What, at worst, what's Carlton's record going to be this year? 15-8, you reckon?
Say 15 wins,
potentially 16 wins. I think most people would say, well, that would be probably worst-ish case scenario to finish around there. If he stays healthy, he's going to blow past 30 votes.
Mm.
Like, I can't see a situation where he stays healthy, Carlton is as good as we know that they're going to be in winning 15-plus games, and he doesn't continue that amount of votes that he's polling.
Yeah.
The umpires love him. Everyone thought he was poor last year. Like, everyone was saying, oh, Cripps, he's had a down year. The umpires gave him 22 votes and he played 21 games.
It's funny how we say that depending on what our expectation is of every player.
Yeah, it's very hard to back up a Brownlow medal year. Very few players can have a Brownlow medal year and then be better the following year. It just doesn't happen. So he was good last year without being extraordinary, and he still polled in the 20s and finished eighth in the count. So he is the one I think is most likely right now to win it.
Yep, there you go. You heard it here first. Patrick Cripps is a certainty to win the Brownlow medal, according to Jake.
And I think the reason why I wouldn't be running to Heaney right now is because he, even if you give him 15, I think that's probably a few more than he probably has, but give him 15 right now. He probably needs another 15 at least to win it. We know 30 is kind of the number now. Can he do that? Potentially, but I'm not sure. And you've mentioned players that are coming back into the side. So you can expect big games from Mills, from Parker, from Warner, from Goulden down the stretch as well. And then there's the possibility that they actually shift him into the forward line. Like, that's not totally out of the equation. It seems nuts to us because he's been the best player of the year playing more midfield. But it's not beyond the realms of possibility that they say, we're going to put you back into a position you've played 85% of your career. So... I think that's a reason that I'd be a little scared off, because obviously we know that it's much harder to poll votes there. So, it's Cripps for me at the moment.
Just quickly, to those who don't know, explain how this predictor works, because it does differ somewhat to the usual predictors that you see out there.
Yeah, I've explained it a few times. So instead of going 3-2-1 for every game, which most will do, it still will allocate 6 votes, but I can break them down a little bit more. So if there's a player that's clearly best on ground, I'll give them 3 and then I can go down from there. If there are 2 players that were head and shoulders above everyone else, instead of giving 1-3 and 1-2, I'll give them both 2.5, and it kind of evens out a bit more over the course of the season. You get a bit more of an accurate result over the course of the season. So you're only going to be 0.5 off. One's going to get the 3, one's going to get the 2. Whereas if you get it the other way around, you're 1 off. And that differential adds up over the course of the season.
Yeah, so a game where someone's supposed to get 3, they might only get 2, but you've given them 2.5 somewhere else, so it evens up.
You're going to be always going to be a bit closer to what they actually get over the course of the season, and I find that it's a lot more accurate at the end of the year, for sure.
Yep, check it out on espn.com.au/AFL. Jake is updating that weekly.
Just one other player to keep an eye on. You asked me before we started, who's a surprise player? Who's the player on your leaderboard at the moment that you're surprised to see? Now, to be honest, it's Heaney. Like, I didn't expect him. I don't think anyone expected him to have the start to the year he's had. But the other one, I reckon, just another player to keep an eye. He's not going to win it. He's probably not going to be top 10. But if I was putting money on a player to finish top of the, and gamble responsibly, to finish top of their team right now, it would be Max Holmes for the Cats.
Interesting.
Now, The Geelong is very rare, and they don't have high possession winners. They don't have players through the middle of the ground that consistently get 30 and win stacks of clearances and contestable. They don't have it.
Undefeated as well at the moment.
They're undefeated. They're winning games. I've given him 6 votes. I think he's been in their 2 best players 3 times. So they could going back, it could be a 3 there, it could be a 1, a couple of 2s. And his speed and ball use and run on the outside is eye-catching. The umpires notice it, so he stands out. And as I said, there aren't too many players in that team. Cameron will have his big games. I think Dangerfield, his big games are there's not as many as there used to be. He's getting older. Tom Stewart can have games, but again, it's harder to poll votes as a defender. I think Max Holmes is a massive chance to top Geelong's count. And I wouldn't be surprised if he finished high teens, even close to 20.
Interesting.
Really do.
We'll keep an eye on that.
Last question of the day. Gee, we're flying through these.
Time flies when you're having fun, okay?
West Coast form. So they've won their last 2, as we touched on a little bit earlier. Good signs, encouraging signs. Is it important for the Eagles to not get sucked in and finally part ways with Adam Simpson, regardless of how the season pans out?
Yeah, I think it is pretty important. Don't get sucked in, no matter how many games they win this year. Just, we've got to remember where they are. Unless they win the premiership, of course, then things might change, which isn't going to happen.
You think that's a chance? What percent are you going to put on that?
0.001. They'll win generous. More. They might win more games this season. Their experienced players are all fit at the moment, which they haven't really had at the same time in the last few years. Oscar Allen comes back. Elliot Yeo is reminding us what he could do.
So you're saying they should move on from him?
No, I think so.
But you're just saying that they haven't been fit at any point, and now they are, and they've won.
Now they are, but these are older players as well. We've got McGovern down there as well, who's playing, who's quite injury prone. I just think it's not the worst team on paper, yes, and for that they may win more games, but they're still all over the shop, and once those more experienced older players do part ways, I just don't like where they are. I think they're going to be quite vulnerable. And bringing in a new coach, and having a new voice with younger players to grow with, I think is going to be really important for their direction. They need to keep on moving forward and stop looking backwards. So, yeah, he's been an exceptional coach. He's a premiership-winning coach in 2018, but sometimes it is time to move on. Whether they start winning games or not, I think it is the right call to go in a new direction.
Yeah. I don't want this to be a knee-jerk reaction at all, because it is only 2 wins, and we have 4 years of poor performance, but
they have played well as well, and good on them.
If the trajectory of the Eagles is like this, you would think they're starting to come back up. Like they've got a long way to go.
How long do you expect them to maintain?
Are they going to get worse than this than they are right now? They've won 2 games. They're showing signs.
Yeah,
the excitement is up.
I
think they've hit their bottom. I think they've bottomed out and they're starting the climb back up. It's an enormous climb. But they're starting to climb back up. My point is, if they were going to sack him, why wouldn't they have done it on the decline or the bottom? Why would they wait until it starts to come back up and there's a bit of excitement?
It's a very
and they
good
get
question.
Harley Reid.
And very then good the, question.
The fa- everyone's getting up and about it. And then they say, you know what? We don't want you here anymore. I don't think that's the case. I think if they're going to sack him, they would have done it by now. And I think he probably should stay. You know, he's been there through... So much of it is, well, why does he want to be there? Do you think he wants to be there going through that? He's a premiership winning coach as well. Everyone tells me, you know, that's the be all end all. And why would he want to be there? He's stuck it out. He hasn't done what Damien Hardwick had done and left for a better job. He stayed there.
And kudos to him for doing that. Yep.
And I think, I was talking to Christian about West Coast, they are showing, it's not just that they've won 2 games and they've kind of, you know, fluked into wins. They're showing real signs, particularly in the midfield this season, that they can be a good team. You know, second in the comp for centre clearance differential, third best at scoring from centre bounces, first number one in the midfield for contested possessions. Like, it's not like they're, you know, we talk about North and they'll rank 12th in something and say, gee, they're doing well in that area. They're still miles off the pace. West Coast is actually showing their midfield can be quite good. And it's not just Harley Reid, it's Elliot Yeo who's having a phenomenal season. I don't think anyone expected him to be able to turn it around. Tim Kelly, I think there is a little bit of excitement. And as you said, you pointed out, they've had an enormous injury list over the last couple of years. So to finally get players coming back and playing together, it's very hard to judge the side and Adam Simpson when they don't have the whole team playing.
How many games are they going to win for the rest of the year?
How many more games are they going to win?
Yeah.
I'll give them another 2 wins.
Interesting.
Yeah,
let's
at least.
See. Let's see how they go. That'll do us for today, Jake. Thanks for your time once again. Enjoy the footy today, and the same goes for everyone else at home. Thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you all next week.
Thanks for joining us on the ESPN Footy Pod. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.